My name is Lolita. And, I'm not supposed to play with boys.
Author of the Week on Literary Lusts, brought to you by Radio Gorgeous.
In the Radio Gorgeous studio today, Josephine and I are joined by Helen Croydon. Welcome to Radio Gorgeous, Helen.
Thank you for having me.
Helen, you are a best-selling author, broadcaster, and journalist.
Yes.
Mostly doing immersive journalism.
Yes.
Explain immersive journalism.
Immersive journalism, that's a very good question. It's a good word, isn't it? It means that to get to a story, you immerse yourself in the subject matter. A lot of the articles that I've done historically have always been actually going in, getting my hands dirty, putting myself in the position of the people that I'm reporting on.
Okay, if we can start with your first book. Did your first book, which was entitled Sugar Daddy Diaries, When a Fantasy Became an Obsession, did that start as immersive journalism?
Or... A lot of people ask this. People say, did you go on these, you know, dating websites because you wanted to write a book? And the answer is no. Sugar Daddy Diaries is about a phase, let's call it that, phase in my life where I dated older men. And it was...
Is that because you wanted one?
Yes, it was. I was in my late 20s. And I'd always had a thing for older men, but I think I'd been a bit embarrassed about it. I think when you're that age, you know, you kind of know what you want, but it's not really the same as what all your friends want. They all fancy these boy band lookalikes. And I never found the sort of the typical 20-something guy that attractive. So for the first time in my life, I decided to do something about it. I'd just gone through a breakup and I decided to go internet dating. And I really had in my head this kind of image of, you know, some sophisticated Richard Gere lookalike sitting in a fancy cocktail bar, putting the world to rights. You know, I didn't really want a long-term relationship. I wasn't looking for anything serious. I just wanted this kind of fantasy of an older man. So, yeah, it was absolutely because I genuinely found
older
men attractive.
How old were you going for? What did you put on the website?
I guess, I mean, there's no limits. I wasn't that clinical about it. But I suppose my ideal at that kind of age, or was the man in his 40s, you know, that was the sort of man I'd find
attractive. Makes me laugh, that's old.
Oh no, well now, see, now yeah, I'm approaching that age myself. That is
like
my
cougar.
Big. I know. But it was the sort of the suited, booted
silver fox businessman.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, and also a man, like somebody who was going to pay for dinner and you weren't going to, you know, it's like mealy mouth, are we going Dutch on this?
And you
knew it was a date.
Of course. And it wasn't the money or the wealth that I found attractive. It was the a man who had his stuff together, you know, and success is attractive, and
often
money is a symptom of that. And yes, I suppose I was drawn for that, but I was by no means looking for a rich husband. So to come back to your first question, which was, you know, did I plan on writing a book about it? No, but it just became such a big part of my life and such a fascinating journey, and I met so many interesting people that being a writer anyway, that seemed to coincide with the time that I became a freelance journalist. So I ended up writing about it, just making notes, diary notes, things like that. And then I ended up drafting a book about it. So I think once I decided to write a book about it, then maybe I started to do it a little bit more than I would.
So tell us about, were the successful relationships?
They were successful in that they were what I wanted, which was some sort of low-maintenance lover. They weren't successful in that they ended up being long-term relationships, but that wasn't what I was looking for. So to me, they were successful.
What was the obsession part of it?
It became an obsession. So it started off as a little bit of a fantasy, a little bit of fun, you know, using dating sites for the first time in my life. And then it became an obsession because I found that a lot of these men I was dating were yes, they were willing to pay for dinner. That was kind of obvious. But over time, some of them offered to give me a monthly allowance or take me shopping, buy me gifts. Now, in the beginning, I found that a bit shocking. And I thought, no, you know, girls like me don't do that. But then over time, I started to kind of rationalize it and think, well, actually, if I'm liking these guys anyway, and if I'm, I would be dating them anyway. And then a few things happened that made me think that actually that's not such a bad thing. For example, one of my girlfriends was dating some guy who kind of dumped her after they'd had sex, you know, typical scenario. And she said to me once, she said, you know, it's all right for you. At least, you know, when you're dating these guys and they're taking you shopping, and blah, she said, at least you've got something to show for it. And it made me kind of think, well, actually, if you're having a sort of a, what I call a casual relationship, in a way, what these men that I was dating, what they were almost saying to me is that, you know, I can't invest in you. I haven't got that emotional commitment for some long-term relationship. So I'm going to compensate by offering to pay the way. And in a way, it seemed a lot more honest what the men that I was dating were offering to do than this guy that my friend had dated, who pretended to be.
Yeah,
he'd pretended to be more interested in a serious relationship than he was. Yeah. So I think once I'd made that rationalization, then I was able to kind of accept these gifts.
Tell us the gifts and tell us where you were taken and tell us the high life.
Oh, gosh, I hate being salacious about this. I mean, because it was sort of awkward at the time. It wasn't like I reveled in it.
Come on, really? Tell us.
Come on.
Well,
you're
going to
be
happy.
Come on,
we're into it.
I got taken to New York on a first date by some guy. He was Canadian and he was on a business trip in New York. And he said, why don't you join me? It was a little bit of a crazy thing to do because I just had a few Skype calls with him and didn't know him any more than that. But I took a risk. Yeah, we have to take risks in life. And I went over to New York and I got taken to Prada shopping. It was really funny because I remember us walking down the street and he said, who's your favorite designer? Let's go shopping. And I was thinking, I haven't got a clue. You know, I shopped in Topshop. I didn't know. So, and I think I was just, he sensed that I was being very polite. And then he took me into Prada. And
also,
just said,
he didn't know.
Yeah, that's probably true. But all these, I was in this shop and it was just like a scene out of Pretty Woman because everything that I said, oh, that's nice, innocently, suddenly all these shopkeepers, the assistants had come out and bring these clothes and say, well, I'll put it in the changing room for you. And then they brought out champagne on these silver trays. And before I know it, I was trying all these things on, having a heart attack at the price tags of things. And then he just said, do you like it? You know, to everything I put on. And I was sort of said, well, yeah. Okay, we'll take it.
Oh,
and
brilliant.
Yeah, I was a
little
stunned.
Did you sleep with him that weekend?
I did, yeah. But I mean, of course, when I agreed to go to New York and spend a few nights in a hotel, it's pretty obvious that I was willing to do that anyway. I mean, you're not going to forget, I was in a phase of my life where I was sexually explorative and, you know, women want sex just as much as men. So it's a real myth that you slept with him
in
exchange. Yeah. I knew exactly what was going to happen and I wanted that.
RadioGorgeous.com.
Also at that time, you understood that this was transactional.
It didn't feel transactional at all because I wasn't expecting him to take me shopping. That was a surprise. Mm. I didn't feel like I was using sex as a currency, withholding it or not withholding it. I was just doing what I wanted to do. I was having fun. I was in a, you know, like I say, I was quite sort of in a sexually adventurous phase of life, which was all new to me. I'd never really been like that before. I'd never really
taken the lead as well. I mean, as in you're in control. You felt like, you know, I'm in control of this as much as he is.
Yeah, and in many ways I felt more free in a way than in a conventional dating scenario. Because in a conventional dating scenario, there's always this presumption that, you know, are you going to be serious? Is it going to go somewhere? How much do you like each other?
Do you love me?
Yeah, exactly. Are we going to...
All the insecurities. Whereas you could just put the insecurities away to one side and think, let's have fun.
Exactly. There was no expectation. Yeah. We knew that we probably wouldn't see each other again. He lives in Canada. I live in London. And actually, that suited me. And I think, in a way, that is why these relationships work for me. And that's probably where the obsession came from. Because it was partly because I was getting treated so well with all these gifts. And it was also partly because these types of relationship that weren't going to lead to full-time commitment was actually what I wanted.
Fantastic.
And so, and I imagine that some of the people were married, some of the men were married, some of the, you know, because if they're saying, I can't invest in this, you know.
There were married men on there, without a doubt. And I tried not to meet them, because even though I wasn't looking for a serious relationship, I did want a sort of kind of genuine romance, you know. I did want all the sort of romantic attraction that comes with it, and I didn't want to be that woman, the baddie. So I certainly, a few men who messaged me who said, you know, I want to be discreet, which I read as I'm married, and I didn't meet those men. There were a few times when I met guys who didn't disclose they were married, but then on the date they disclosed they were married. There was one man from America who was married, who I did have a relationship with, but he was in the, it was sort of a broken marriage. But I never wanted to be like the mistress figure. That wasn't part of it.
To me, it sounds like a complete, I mean, I definitely had that kind of fantasy when I was, you know, around the same age. Did you?
I think I did things similar.
Yeah, I mean, I just didn't, I mean, I didn't do it in any formal way.
Yeah, I thought I have to stop because it was becoming something almost like a prerequisite of any relationship that I had. And what had started is this sort of novelty, hey, this is loads of fun, and the money and the gifts and everything is a bonus, but it's not my motivation. After 3 years, I think it was, that I was on these sites, I was starting to think the novelty had gone. So my main motivation was all the kind of the gifts and the, you know, allowance and stuff. And I started to think, well, this wasn't the reason why I did this in the first place. And it was really just turning me off the idea of any real romance in the real world, because I was starting to think, well, what's the point? And there
so
is...
it hardened you.
It was kind of like relationship porn, you
know? Yeah.
Sort of inures you to the real thing.
And there's also this idea that, you know, the men, they were wonderfully respectful and loving and kind. And there's lots of, yes, most of them were involved sex, but there's also lots of affection and lots of talking and lots of intimacy as well. So in that way, they were lovely relationships. But also, you know, I can't deny that because of the arrangement, the man was kind of in control in a way, in that I always had to be on best behavior, you know. So it started to make me feel this sense of obligation when I was in the company of men. Like it almost became like, oh, actually, really, I just want to sometimes just, you know, be on my own and sit at home with a face mask on or something. And it wasn't till I had a more genuine boyfriend after that I kind of realized the differences and thought, God, hey, actually, with a genuine boyfriend, I really can say, you're snoring, get out of the bed and go sleep somewhere else.
Yeah. Where, or yourself.
Yeah, you can just be a lot more in control. Whereas I suppose with these sugar daddy type relationships, I was always, you know, on tiptoes, and that did gave me this sense that, you know, relationships are a bit of a chore.
And you were acting as well, weren't you?
To a certain extent.
Because if you're always on your guard, then you're always, thinking about pleasing them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, not just being yourself.
Yeah.
Did sort of coming out of the, not addiction, but, you know, sort of that model. Is that what has led you to your next book, which is also, I assume, personal exploration? You know, then the book is Screw the Fairy Tale, A Modern Guide to Love and Sex.
Yes. I actually love my second book more than my first book, just because it reveals less about me. So it's kind of one that I can talk about at dinner parties a lot more.
Other people.
I don't think my first book led to that. It's certainly similar in that it's about relationships, and it's very anecdotal, and it's about my relationship views. But Screw the Fairy Tale is about not wanting marriage and kids, and kind of making the argument that you can be completely content and there's more to life than marriage, kids, and we should all stop getting hooked on the fairy tale ideal that relationships are the answer to happiness for everyone. So,
because that's an idea that sets in early. I want to find my person, even if you don't want to get married, but the idea that your soulmate is out there and you're supposed to meet them. You know, this is, I mean, I don't know if it's beyond biology, but, you know.
Yeah, it's unhealthy. I think, I call it the fairy tale narrative in my book. And I think it's a really unhealthy mantra to be brought up with, because it assumes that a relationship is going to be the answer to everything and that's going to make you happy. And so number one, it's going to stop you seeking happiness and independence in yourself. And number two, it puts such pressure on the relationship that if it's not perfect, because what relationship is perfect, then we're going to think, oh, that's not right. They're not the one. And we kind of, a lot of relationships, I think, buckle under that pressure.
So what are some of the different arrangements?
So part explored of the book, I wanted to look at the alternatives to kind of the conventional 2.4 kids and marriage and monogamy. So I immersed myself, again, this is where the immersive journalism came in. I immersed myself in lots of different relationship cultures. So, for instance, I looked at couples in open marriages. I looked at polyamorous relationships, which, for those who don't know, is where there's more than one person in a relationship, maybe three people, maybe four people. But polyamorous people believe that they can love more than one person at the same time. So I went to this polyamorous commune in Scotland and I stayed there for a night, and 15 people in one relationship, and they all claim to love each other equally.
And did it appear to the outside view? Did it seem harmonious?
It did to the outside. I think they were very intent on making it look harmonious, obviously, because there was a visitor there.
An audience.
Yeah, and they obviously they want to make sure that polyamory...
What was the age range?
A big age range, actually. I'd say early 20s, right the way up to early 50s. Mm-hmm. So there's two core members of the group who are married, legally married, man and a woman, and they kind of started this relationship, commune, whatever you want to call it, 20 years ago. And it started because she was always into girls, so and he kind of liked the fact that he was always into girls. Yeah. So he sort of welcomed it, and then she used to bring girls home and they'd mess around, and then I think eventually some of them just never left. And they kind of started this almost this relationship which grew and grew. And I think that some of the newer members of the group joined about 3 years before when I went there. A few people have left over the years, but there has been kind of a core group for about 20 years.
So interesting, because of like this, I wonder what the status of people are, you know, like does the core, you know, the core group, do they have more power over the new people? And is someone being less there for longer, and the age and the sexual power that people have over each other?
I mean, there's bound to be so many politics in there. Yeah. Well, I think that
they take out the garbage.
Yeah.
Well, they'd have a rota on these things, because the idea is, you know, it's communal. You know, that's why they call it a commune. So they pool all their income. Some of them go out to work.
In the real world.
In the world. Yeah. These girls are painters and decorators, and they get out in the morning and they go out and then they bring all the income home. There's more women. In fact, there were 12 women and only 3 men. But they're all bisexual.
Wow.
So, and it's apparently this, it's the women who are the most sexual. But, you know, what struck me was that they have no independence. So what I set out to investigate when I wrote this book was kind of, you know, the alternatives to marriage and kids, because some people find that whole idea of sharing your life with someone quite oppressive. So that's why I wanted to look at the alternatives.
Radio Gorgeous, podcasts for women.
Yeah, so what are some of the other experiences? I think you went to Ukraine to find a bride.
Yes. So, I wasn't personally looking for a bride, but I met all the men who are looking for mail order brides. So I joined a group of 25 men, Western men from Europe, America, and the UK, who went to Ukraine on what they call a romance tour. So it's organized by these Russian dating sites, and they create like a 2-week package tour for them to go and find
bride shop.
Yeah, and they have these events that they call socials, which is where they introduce all the local girls to the guys. So if you're a woman in Ukraine, and you're single, you pretty much join a marriage agency. And it's the marriage agencies that provide all the girls. I mean, it's quite something, really, because the women in Ukraine are desperate to get out, and I don't blame them. There's a population imbalance of, you know, gender imbalance, and that there's more women than men. And there's also very limited job prospects for women in Ukraine. They're kind of backwards in that respect. And a lot of the jobs are very menial tasks, cleaning, hairdressing, that kind of thing. And it's minus 15 degrees in the reason. You know, they want to get out. And they see these men as a ticket out. And, you know, I think in the West, we're quick to criticise these women for, you know, looking for a rich Western husband. But that is their only route out.
I'm more interested in the men.
Yes, so am I. Mm.
You know, like, I want someone beholden to me, or, you know.
It's amazing. These men,
a lot of the men. Yeah.
It was very interesting. A lot of them were divorced, and they are looking for what they call, they kept going on about the word soulmate. They kept saying, I'm looking for a soulmate. I'm looking for, I'm looking for a woman that I can fall in love with. So they've got this romantic idea of what they want. But yet, on the other hand, they're so clinical about it because they think that they can sort of choose someone who's got, you know, certain colour hair, certain colour eyes. And it's almost like they are looking for a role to fill. Mm. They are looking for the role of a wife rather than the person. They want to care for these wives. They want to genuinely fall in love. But at the same time, they are looking for this stereotypical picture. You know, this one man even said to me, I want a woman who, when I come home, is sitting in a rocking chair cradling my child. And you just think, you know, it's textbook twee. They want, you know, what era? You know, you're born in the wrong era, clearly. So that is the sort of that's the sort of men that do that.
So what kind of conclusions did you draw? I mean, it's just an exploration.
I've never felt as much myself I've never felt as lively, as energetic, as kind of enthusiastic about life as I have when I've been single. So
I'm the same. Sorry.
Really?
Yeah. If I look back at any time in my life when I haven't had a partner, I've got my shit together much more. I've been much more dynamic. I've been much more... My life's gone faster, further, you know. And when you're sharing your life with someone, it is a compromise. You are giving up a part of yourself. You know? And you are... I mean, I'll never forget the first year I got married was the hardest year of my life because I had to come home after work. I'd never done that before. I'd always gone straight to a pub, you know, gone to a club, gone meet friends, gone to, you know. And suddenly I had to go back home. And I was tied to this person, and I, you know,
found
it so really
funny.
Difficult. Yeah, but I'm still married 20 years later. Many ups
and
downs.
And is the compromise worth it?
I can't imagine it without it. And I have got two children, which, as much as they bring me a lot of pain, I adore them. You know, I do love my children.
Yeah,
and I never ever thought I'd get have children either.
Me neither. Yeah. I just wanted to get married, but I never... Well, actually, no, I didn't think I would get married. I remember saying to my grandmother, I was like, I certainly wouldn't marry someone I didn't live with first. You know, it's like, well, what? You know, you're going to road test them, right?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Obviously.
But that's the other thing, the assumption of living together.
Yeah, would
you,
would you live with someone?
No way. Okay. No way. This is the thing. So I'm not against falling in love. I mean, we all want to fall in love, don't we? But, oh my gosh, the idea of... I'm like sharing my space and my wardrobe, or like someone interfering with my washing system. Honestly, it gives me palpitations. So I have lived with someone, and again, I just didn't really enjoy it. I felt stressed the whole time. But that was when I was much younger. I was in my 20s, and that's when I kind of thought that is what couples
do. How old are you now?
I'm 37 now.
Okay. So how do you break it to a man that you don't want any of these things?
Well, I think for me it's pretty easy because it's all over. Every article I've ever written is all... They're going to Google me and they get my views on relationship. But no, but generally...
and if they still show up.
Yeah, I make it very clear, I think.
Thank you so much for coming on to Radio Gorgeous.
Helen Croydon, thank you so much.
Thank you.
This is a Radio Gorgeous podcast made for RadioGorgeous.com, produced and presented by Donna Freed and edited by Anna Palankis.